You're listening to the Frickin' Awesome Entrepreneur Podcast, session 34.
Welcome to the Frickin' Awesome Entrepreneur Podcast with Alyssa Dare Nelson, where we blow up the myth that you're meant to be well-rounded and independent. Here, we uncover what makes you uniquely awesome while also giving you actionable insights in to fill those gaps of the not-so-awesome. You are perfectly lopsided. Own it. Now let's dive in.
Well, hey. Welcome to another live coaching episode on the Frickin' Awesome Entrepreneur Podcast. In case no one's told you today, you are frickin' awesome. And guess what, guys? I know you're not surprised, but my guest today is frickin' awesome. I'm super excited to share him with you because I'm actually a user of his amazing platform. And it's not something that really has gotten its legs into the entrepreneurial circles yet. So, it's so exciting. Like, we're on the cutting edge of this, which is fantastic. He might say bleeding edge, but I would say cutting edge. So, without further ado, let me read you just a little bit about our guest today. As president and CEO of Actionable.co, Chris Taylor helps business consultants bring learning, sustainment, and measurable behavior change to their client engagements. As host of iTunes' number 2 ranked business podcast, The 21st Century Workplace, Chris regularly hosts conversations with the world's leading thinkers on leadership, change management, and employee engagement, bringing his trademark curiosity and humor to the complex topics of business strategy and professional management. See, can you see why we had a little bit in common, why I was totally drawn in by his platform? Oh, so good. Chris has penned over 150 articles on aspects of our new world of work and is a regular speaker on stages domestic and abroad. And by domestic, he means Canadian domestic, but we'll go with US as well. Welcome one of my favorite Canadians, Chris Taylor, to the show. Hey, Chris, how are you?
After that introduction, I'm glowing, Alyssa. Thank you.
Yeah.
How are you?
Yeah, I am so good. And this is really exciting. I was drawn to Actionable because of this whole sustainment thing. Yeah. As somebody who, you know, you walk on a stage and you maybe give a great presentation and you can see the energy, you can feel the energy in the air. Sure. And you get off the stage and you're like, was that just a flash in the pan? Because I don't want to be, you know, or you give a training to a group, right? A small business, et cetera. And you're like, was that just going to be another one of those things? I came from over 10 years in healthcare where there was, you know, this new thing and this new thing and this new thing, and they all died out. And I was like, how do you sustain that? And so I was totally drawn in by Actionable, which of course we'll explain to everybody what Actionable is and how it works and all of that kind of thing. Sure. In a moment here. But here's the point, is that it's actually sustainable. You help it to stick. Yep. Which is fantastic. So why don't you share with us just a little bit about your history and your background and how you got the idea for Actionable and, you know, what pushed that forward?
Sure. So for the next 3 hours, I'll fill you in on that backstory. I think, you know, I'm happy to go into it. I think just before we move into sort of the background of Actionable, mm-hmm. I think you hit on a really important point there, which is, you know, there's so many of us, and I'm sure many of your audience members, who just get such a rush, such a high from expressing themselves genuinely, authentically, passionately from stage or in a training session. And then you, if they're anything like me, you have that bit of a slump afterwards, exactly as you said, which is, now what? Like, what's going to happen for them? I don't get to stay a part of the journey. I did my thing and now I'm gone. And it's that question of now what? And for me, there's something really interesting around intent. Because at the end of your session, whether that was a keynote or a coaching call or a day-long workshop, the end of the session is typically, or nearing the end, where the people in your audience have the highest level of intent around applying something they learned and heard from you. Right? They've bought in, hopefully at that point, they've drank the Kool-Aid, they're listening, they're learning, they're consuming. And then as soon as they leave that sort of protected bubble of safe learning space, and they get back into the world where they're buffeted by more information and different viewpoints, and they get back to their desk and all the people around them weren't at the sessions, they don't know the language. There's just all these factors chipping away at our resolve or our intention to actually apply what we learned. And so I think what's really interesting for me and for anybody who's in sort of a teaching space, I would hope it's to focus on that bridge between the high intent that exists at the end of a well-developed or delivered session and the realities of when you get back to work. It's that small moment in time of identifying how we're going to move from one to the other. So anyway.
Yeah.
Do you want to comment on that, or I'm going to go into the history?
No, it's so true. And no matter what conference you go to or what training you're a part of, you leave and you're like, oh, I'm going to do this. It's going to be so great. We've all been in that place.
We have notebooks full of notes, right? Full of
right.
ideas.
Yeah. Right. And even if we whittle it down to like, I'm going to do just this one thing. Mm-hmm. So often you get back into the routine of life and you're pulled 18 different ways. And even if you have, and guys, I've done this 1,000 times and I know you have too. You carve it out on your calendar. Like, I'm going to have this time for the implementation of what I learned at this conference. And you still don't quite do it, you know, sure. because there's not that accountability there. There's not the buzz of the event itself. Mm-hmm. And it's tough. And you decided to tackle that issue in the most brilliant of ways. So tell us a little bit about what actionable is. Yeah. Because people are like, wait a second, there's a thing like this? Like, how do we get our hands on that?
Sure. Well, I appreciate the thought that it looks brilliant. Now it's the 10-year rearview mirror of actually seeing all the pivots and the mistakes and stumbling blocks and changes of direction along the way that I think has led to where, well, I know has led to where we're at. So what actionable is ostensibly is, so we have a team of folks that are extremely passionate about, focused on, deeply immersed in the world of behavior change and adult learning and neuroscience around how we actually take concepts that are thrust upon us and convert them into something practical, something actionable that we can move forward to advance our own lives or careers. So that's at the very high level sort of ideological sense, that's what we do. At a practical sense, we have both a methodology and a technology that we've combined to equip consultants, coaches, facilitators, people like yourself, Alyssa, mm-hmm. Who are vetted. We have a very strict no jerk policy. Can I use actual language? Or
yeah.
Yeah, we have a very strict no asshole policy in the folks that we work with. And we then help them understand how to take their existing content and to structure it in such a way at the end of the session that they can convert from intent into action for their participants, and then a technology that allows individuals to capture their commitments and to measure their progress towards those commitments, which is a benefit to the individual, of course, but is also a benefit to the consultant or facilitator because they can actually see in real time the impact and be able to bring that impact back to their client, the buyer, to say, hey, that great session that I did and everyone rated it really well in the room, here's what's happening. And Joey's team is doing exceptionally, and Kevin's team is falling down, and Sally's team is the rock stars, and we should really be looking at what Sally's doing differently than Kevin, and so on. And so it extends the conversation for the consultant. But that is not where we started. That's where we are now, and it's fun. We get to work on exciting projects with great consultants. But we actually started with actionable books, which back 10 years ago was a business book summary site. I was going to say service, but it wasn't even that. You didn't even pay for it. It was just, and it still exists, but it was from the very beginning, the focus has really been around, there's a lot of great content out there. In fact, basically any content we'd ever want is already in existence and most of it's free. The real challenge I identified for myself was in taking the pause, the time out to actually think about the book I just read and how to take one or two ideas and how to apply them in my life in a way that had lasting impact. And so Actionable Books was ostensibly built to do that. It was to help people that were interested or wanted to, A, find a good book around a particular topic, but then to also start to work through the process of what's in this book that was personally relevant to me and how am I going to apply it? So I started that by myself. I started it after I got fired from the corporate job that I had at the time, mostly because I was putting way more time into the side project than I was into the actual job, which may sound familiar to certain folks. I started it with a $2,500 credit card and about $3,000 in the bank and just sort of hacked it out. I mean, I did all sorts of things at the beginning, social media marketing, which I didn't know. I just sort of figured it out as I went. I was doing a little bit of consulting. And then what I found sort of hit was companies wanted me to come in and share concepts from the books that I was reading. Not my own stuff, mind you, but Dan Pink stuff and Gladwell stuff and Sinek stuff and so on. and to take these actionable summaries and turn them into 30-minute workshops, 45-minute workshops. And so I did that and I liked it and I enjoyed honing the craft of presenting and organizing messaging around stories and how to make that meaningful for the audience. And then I started to develop, I've always been focused on what can we build that other people can use without me having to deliver it every time, right? It's that sort of not make money while you sleep, but having a thing that people can consume on their own time. And so I started building what's now called Actionable Conversations, which was 1 hour meetings in a box, which back then were focused on a concept from a popular business book that allowed a team to unpack that idea. So what is the long tail, right? And back 10 years ago, I started doing this. A lot of people didn't know what the long tail was. And so maybe they still don't. Find the book, Chris Anderson. It's brilliant. But they could talk about what it was in 5 minutes, go, oh, I get it. All right, short head, long tail. Maybe there's opportunity for us now in a digital economy. Then spend 45 minutes actually talking through what that meant for them, to them. So really context. And then I had this sort of like trail off ending at the time, which was, and now you should do something with it. And that was it. But the content was really well received, and coaches and consultants in Toronto, where I'm from professionally, I'm originally from the West Coast. Which is always the caveat that people that weren't born in Toronto throw in, right? It's like, here's where I'm actually from. It's like, I'm from New York, but I'm actually from Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I had to Americanize that. You got that right.
Yeah, I sure did.
Good. So the idea was working well, these modules, these conversations in a box, the content was sound. Coaches and consultants in Toronto started asking if they could license it. We got into this weird place where I was selling to end clients and also sort of competing with myself because these consultants were also selling to those end clients. And I made the call that we were going to stop selling directly, work exclusively with our consultants, which is probably the single greatest decision I've ever made in my professional career. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I'm curious because that is a hard decision to make.
Yeah.
Do you have a short list of pros and cons that made you decide to go that route? Or was it more of a gut instinct that you just like, I feel compelled to go this way?
Yeah, I think it was probably the latter, but justified by pieces of the former. So when I started the business on day one, I said to my then girlfriend, now wife, that there was two things I wanted to do with the business. One is that I wanted it to allow me to be geographically free. So work from anywhere, digital nomad sort of thing. Although again, I didn't know that term at the time. And the second thing is I wanted a derivative product, things that people could purchase over and over again. Mm-hmm. And the live delivery, while I enjoyed it, having the business reliant on that for me to do that wasn't in line with what the original intention was with the business. So from a logical standpoint, it was that. But there was an emotional gut call to the fact that there are brilliant consultants out there who are unemployable, i.e. I could offer you all the money in the world, Alyssa, but you're not going to come work for me as an employee because you're doing what you're doing and you love it. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at that and said, yeah, there are fabulous people that I can have on the team as employees as well, but I don't want to limit myself. I want to work with these consultants that are doing powerful work in their own space and find a way to support them in their work. Because also they're typically the true believers. They're the people that I want to spend time with because they want to improve the world of work. This is a calling more than a job, right? So somewhat selfishly, it insulated me from the end clients for a long period of time. So not as long as those folks, but
yeah. So I think right now is actually a really good time to bring in what your StrengthsFinder themes are.
Sure.
They're all brilliant because they pretty much match mine.
Right.
We're not quite twinsies, but really, really close. Uh-huh. And I can hear so much of your strength themes in what you do and how it started and where it's going. So your strength themes in order, futuristic, strategic, right? So it makes more sense to have something that's duplicatable and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Sure. Communication. So you take what all of this content and you package it in a way that people can actually hear it and understand it. Mm-hmm. It's about that expressing of a really great story. Activator, you just kind of started and you're like, I'll figure it out along the way. And we're going to make lots and lots of mistakes, but that's okay. Cause that's how we learn best.
Exactly.
And then that positivity, which is like, I want to insulate myself, as you said, with people who are like-minded, who are positive, who lift me up and who have this vision to make the world a better place. And that's kind of that positivity futuristic combo put together as well. And I just think that is so brilliant. And you know, as you started to put together what actionable is now today, it's interesting because, you know, you and I, like I said, have very similar strength themes, and analytical isn't in either one of our profiles. But I was really drawn not only to the stickiness of what actionable can help with, right? Because it's a sustainable change, which is what our goal is. But I was also drawn to the lead versus lag indicators of the real-time data so that you know, is this making a difference? You can prove it to the people, the buyer, right? The managers, the bigger companies that you're working with that have actually hired you. And you can actually make a difference in real time with the people who might not quite get it for one reason or another. And you can come by their side and say, hey, how can I help you? Rather than 18 months later or 12 months later, when this person is now really struggling to kind of keep up with the culture change, that you can sort of nip that in the bud and really help them along. And so I just love how your strength teams have come together for you. And this is just a really good example of how, even when you have similar strength themes as somebody else, how they can show up in a different way. Because your strength teams just tell you your how you go about doing whatever it is you do. Like, I will never create this an amazing platform technology because I just don't have any interest, nor do I have any education or skill in that area. But it doesn't mean that I can't lean into your skills and expertise to go, hey, can I be a part of this? Right. And then we are better together, truly.
Absolutely.
So I think that's just a really neat component of it. And because you are such a positive and strategic mind, you do surround yourself with people who have strengths in areas that you maybe don't necessarily have strengths to get this message out and to get the platform out so that more people can make a difference with it. So now Actionable is moving on to yet another level, which is pretty exciting. Chris and I got to be together in the same room for 3 days. Chris, was it 4 days?
I don't remember. It felt far too short and like forever at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. To kind of talk about how are we using this in our businesses? And my goal going into the summit, the Actionable Summit, was to really figure out how do I integrate this in so that it's just a part of my business practice. And I came out of there actually knowing how to do that, which is really cool. And surprisingly, or rather not surprisingly, I'm actually implementing.
That's so awesome.
There's some really exciting things, you guys, coming up that will integrate this amazing platform, this amazing technology into programs that I have rolling out as well. But Chris, because you have Futuristic and because I know you have a vision, what is the vision for Actionable?
Well, I would say multifaceted, but there's really two components to it. So we made a very public decision last year not to take on venture cap funding. As a technology company, there's sort of a natural path, which is raise some seed, build a viable product, raise some more money, build a bigger, sell it. And I looked around at the community that we have, our consultant community, and some of the early stage investors that we brought on, many of whom are also consultants. And nobody wants that. Nobody is focused on a 5 to 8 year scale it as fast as possible and exit. And the reason I mentioned that sort of in parallel to answering your question is that it allows us to think for a longer time frame than what a institutional investor may be looking for, right? And that, by the way, is not a knock on VCs. I think I've probably got 20 business ideas in my head, 19 of which would make perfect sense for VC. This one just happens to not, based on where we want to go. The vision is to be the back pocket resource, the secret weapon, if you will, for the small group of consultants that we work with around the globe to bring meaningful change to their client organizations. And when I say meaningful, I mean that word intentionally. I use that word intentionally because one of the challenges that we see often is that the business objectives and individual objectives or desires are not always, and I would say rarely, in alignment in a specific and spoken way. And what the sort of Trojan horse, as one consultant described it to me about Actionable, is that yes, there's a technology so people make commitments and track their behavior changes. And that's typically what gets people in the first place to say, yeah, let's give it a shot. But part of the model is these hour-long conversations. And that, you know, they used to be on business books. Now they're on whatever topic the consultant's running. But the structure of those conversations are designed to allow a voice, to invite a voice from every single person in the organization, and to talk through the C-suite business objectives and how it impacts me, Steve, on the front line, in the ditch, or at the fry thing. We call that thing?
the fry basket?
You can tell I didn't spend a ton of time in fast food. That I actually have a say and I can find relevance in the corporate objective creates, to me, a pretty beautiful place to work. If you feel that the business objectives of the organization you work for are aligned with your personal objectives in a truly deep, meaningful way, that does nothing but positive things.
Yeah.
And that's exciting to me. So that's sort of the fairly vague but overarching vision of what the company's doing, is to impact more and more and more people by measuring behavior change. You can't see my air quotes, but measuring behavior change, although that's part of it, but really inviting better dialogue throughout an organization.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Thanks. I'm so excited. Yeah. So it's, there's more to come. And I think, like you said, actionable is largely used with consultants who are in the corporate facing sector, but there's so much more opportunity to people like me, starting membership sites, masterminds, group coaching programs, and even individual clients where you can really facilitate the change that you are hoping and praying that your clients will have. And so the opportunities are vast in so many different sectors, so many different fields. And, you know, I know we have a lot of coaches that listen to this podcast. Mm-hmm. So listen in, because this might be something that is a game changer for your business in making your content truly stick, because I know that you are passion driven and people focused, and you want to make sure that your content sticks. So for just a moment, Chris, I want to change topics a little bit. So we all, like, people are listening like, how in the heck? Wow, this guy is brilliant, which you are. And wow, like, he's, you know, he learned all the things that he had to learn in the last 10 years, and now it's easy sailing. Right. Yeah. There is this saying, new level, new devil. And I think, you know, it's really important for us as entrepreneurs, no matter how big our businesses get, no matter how seasoned we are, to, like, hey, you know, it's okay. We can tackle any challenge that we're having together. Mm-hmm. So what challenge are you facing right now in your business?
You know, so I was thinking about this in prep for this conversation, and there's two that I could focus on. Why don't I give you the 4-second version of each one, and you can tell me which one you want to dig into.
Fun. Okay. Cool.
So one is, as the community continues to grow, so the consultants that we work with, the act of keeping sort of the laggards from an understanding standpoint up to speed becomes a bigger issue, right? The more people you have, the harder it is to get everyone across, in my experience so far, get everyone across the latest thinking around, in our case, how to position actionable, how to integrate it into your practice, et cetera. So that's one bucket we can talk about. The other bucket is, I noticed that my own view of money, the challenges that I had when the issue was $1,000, are the same issues that I had when it's $10,000, or the same issues that I have when it's $100,000. It doesn't matter what the multiple is, the mindset, the challenges, the mistakes that I've made in regards to the small amounts of money just compound as you get bigger, and they don't go away until the systemic issue is addressed. So where do you want to go?
Oh, well, I have had, and as you know, like, these things rear their heads when you think, dang, I thought I totally tackled that. And why is this rearing its head again? Yeah. Are you familiar with Joe Polish?
Yeah,
do you know who that is?
Yeah.
I had the chance to see him live at the Best Year Ever Blueprint, which is Hal Elrod and John Berghoff's annual, you know, goal setting, get it done event in San Diego every December. If you guys haven't been to Best Year Ever Blueprint, go. It's great. And we'll have a chance to meet in person. It'll be awesome. But so Joe Polish was up on the stage, and I'd never been exposed to him before. So he was kind of a new character for me. And I say character because he has got a very bright and loud personality in all of the best ways. And an incredible story. And he starts shaking his head at one point. He's like, gosh, you know, people, you know, there's all these people out there that say that money can't buy happiness. And I was like, oh my gosh, what is he about to say? And he goes, you know, the people who say that are the same people who just haven't given enough away. Hmm. And I was like, like my brain exploded on the spot, because I grew up with this limiting belief around money that said that working really hard for money and earning money was really noble and honorable, mm-hmm. but having money was not. Having money was greedy in some fashion. And I don't know exactly what your beliefs that you grew up around money were, but for me, that was like, oh my gosh, I can't have money in the bank, because that means that I'm keeping too much and I'm greedy. Because, mm-hmm. You know, these limiting beliefs, they form when we're like five. Sure. So when you uncover them, you realize, oh gosh, that sounds like a little kid, because a little kid formed that, that belief. So when you are talking about your issues around money, what are the things that typically come up for you? Like, what is that core belief that you fight with?
So I launched my first business when I was 11, making devil sticks. Do you remember devil sticks? They were like little, they had tassels on the end. It was a stick in the middle. Then you had a stick in each hand and you bounce this thing around between the two sticks.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
For those listening, you can, fire sticks was the, you know, the Bible Belt name for them. But devil sticks, fire sticks. I started manufacturing those when I was 11, and we would have these shows that we would go to, these like fairs, right? School fairs. And we'd sell a whole bunch of them and then wouldn't sell anymore until the next fair. Right. And so there'd be this like big influx of cash, again in quotes, probably like $200, which was a big deal when I was 11, and then nothing for a while. And I did a whole bunch of entrepreneurial things through high school, and then after university I was you mentioned Hal and John, I was in the Cutco world, and there was this feast and famine mentality that carried with me through all of that, which was, I'm gonna go make it rain, we're gonna celebrate and like big, and then I'm not gonna have any money, but that's okay because it keeps me hungry, and I'm gonna go to the next thing and make more money. And when it was just me, sort of lone wolf-esque, then that's actually not a terrible way to live. Certain people couldn't handle it, but I kind of got off on the high of the hunt, right? Mm-hmm. But as the business has grown and we have 12 full-time employees, the sort of leap before you look, which, you know, pulling directly from the StrengthFinder language, just doesn't fly. It creates way too much anxiety for members of the team. It creates too much uncertainty around scalability. And so I've literally never had a cash buffer ever, right? As an individual, and every dollar I've made, I've put back into the business. And as a business owner, and you know, we're doing seven figures now, like it's a business, right? With people that depend on it and families that rely on it for their livelihood, you just can't operate like that. And so I didn't realize until recently working with my own coach, how much of that personal sort of unconscious belief around money I was bringing to how we operated as a business. And I think it was reinforced through the fact that as we went from one employee to three to five to eight, I was still able to stay on top of that, sometimes through Herculean effort, but I could go generate $100,000 in revenue to pay for the next 2 months or whatever, right? But there's a cap to that, because I can't personally go out and generate that revenue when I'm trying to run a business, right? And I think that was part of it. That's the hard part for me that I'm still mm-hmm. working through, is how do I transition from, you know, I have pride in my sales abilities, to sort of let go of that enough to be able to focus on the stability of the whole, not just on generating revenue this month. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. How do you do with systems and processes? Sometimes Activator loves new things so much that it's not like, doesn't really love a lot of processes, because it loves to figure some things out new every single time. Do you thrive on processes, or do you buck against them?
I thrive on building processes. And so I think that's one of the advantages to the model that we've built, is that I can build process that I know works for our consultant community, share it out, refine it, tweak it. I enjoy that iterative build process. Once mm-hmm. it's built, I've sort of lost interest in it, but there are people in the community that are really process focused, and so they will gravitate to it and use it effectively. And so I think that's part of it for me, is being able to say there are people that are better at executing within process. So I have a number of folks on the team that operate that way. I work with some great people that operate that way, which is fabulous. And I just don't get involved in that, right? It's about sort of recognizing where I can be of highest value, which is typically in sales conversations, but not solely driving it, and in building things that other people can use on an ongoing basis.
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing for sure is a system around or process around the dollars and cents of the business. Are you familiar with Profit First? Have you ever read that book?
I don't think
I know. You're a voracious reader.
I don't think I have.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay. That's a really good one. So Mike Michalowicz is the author.
Mike, yeah.
And oh yeah, he wrote The Pumpkin Plan, right?
Yes, and The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur.
And The Toilet Paper Entrepreneur, you got it. So he also wrote a book called Profit First, because 83% of small business owners, and small business, by the way, is defined as any revenue less than $25 million a year. So we're all small business owners. Exactly. 83% don't have a buffer.
Right.
83% are literally going paycheck to paycheck, or month to month rather. Mm-hmm. And it's a very scary place to be. Now, here's the funny thing is that strength themes like Activator thrive on the sprint. Mm-hmm. Right. And strategic is all about, ooh, we've got a situation at hand. Let's figure it out. Let's solve the issue. And so it actually thrives on a deadline. It thrives on something brand new. It thrives on, oh, we've got a 100-meter sprint. Great. The difficulty comes in when you're trying to sprint a marathon.
Yeah. And bring a whole team with you, right? Because not
right. And bring it. And that's the thing. When you're on your own, it's not that big of a deal, because you're the only one feeling that stress. Right. But suddenly you add the responsibility of going, oh my gosh, I'm supporting this person's family. Mm-hmm. And if I don't make this work, this person loses their job. And I really care about that. And
sure.
here's the caveat. You only care, like, that only feels like pressure if you care about people. Right?
So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and understanding how those strength themes are wired is, you know, can help you to sort of redirect it. So that feast or famine thriving thing that you were talking about, like, hey, I actually kind of like when I have to eat pickles, and it's like, I've got nothing in the bank, but you know what? I can go make this happen. My curiosity is around, how can you give yourself a very short deadline, something that's exciting that you can push towards that isn't dollars?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. I think it's interesting, because I've been tackling it a couple different ways, but in regards to that piece, I think the part of it is, again, being surrounded by great people. I'm really fortunate with the team that I have, that I work with. The getting clear on what the overarching objective is as the sprint, which is sort of what I've been doing over the last couple of weeks, is sort of clarifying the strategy in my own mind as far as what the next 12 months look like, to be able to do that in a very short period of time, to be able to hand it off to the people that are actually going to build more structure around that and put more consideration into the true dollars and cents. I think one of the challenges with the optimist too, right, is that it's everything is best case scenario, and trying to temper that, I find I have to cut it in half and then cut it in half and then give it to my wife, and she cuts it in half and then give it to Jane, one of my colleagues, and she cuts it in half, and then maybe it's at a place of accurate, right? Like, it's yeah. Wild. So anyway, leveraging
the eternal optimists, people with positivity. And it just has to be buffered by a team of people who are like, is that really reasonable? Well, no, it's not reasonable, but we have to stretch.
Right.
It's all about the stretch goal.
Right.
Indeed. So figuring out for yourself, how could you redirect that, that sprint, so that it's not the, hey, I gotta go eat at the end of this week or the end of this month, which is what it used to be. And now you're not thriving on that anymore because of the pressure that it puts on you when you think, hey, we might run out of money. Which, you know, again, I know actionable is thriving, so you're not on a month to month sort of basis, right. but that same, like you said, that same belief is sort of stuck in there. Right. So redirecting that sprint line, what does that finish? And then I would encourage you to read Profit First.
I will check it out.
I've just transitioned my own business over to work like that, because it's a lot of accounts, but once you get into the habit of this, and this is where good processes, are important, you actually begin to pay yourself, ladies and gents, which is really important. and then you have a separate account for profit, which is not the same thing as owner's draw. You kind of treat yourself like your own employee, and you actually pay yourself every single month. So you're not throwing everything back into your business. You're actually paying yourself, and you're setting a certain percentage aside for profit, which you only draw out once a quarter. And at first that profit might be $12. It's okay. But you know, you begin to have that satisfaction of having additional left over. And that can be really addicting too. And so for any business that's less than $25 million a year, that's a really great system, and it's catching fire. I'm actually going to be getting myself certified in it because I feel so passionately about just a very different style of bookkeeping and accounting for small business owners. So I'll be curious to hear if you get a chance to read the book and what you think of the concepts inside of it, and then what you choose to redirect your activator on. Cool. What are those short little deadlines? So I know that there's people out there that are going, okay, well, this actionable platform seems like a pretty awesome thing. I do want to actually make a difference that sticks. How do I find out more about Actionable? They're asking. So how do they find out more about Actionable, Chris?
I would say they could do one of two things, Alyssa. So they could either visit us at actionable.co, which they can explore, get a sense of what Actionable is all about. Also, if you're interested in those free book summaries, that's actionablebooks.com. But I'd also suggest, I'm going to put you on the spot here, Alyssa, but they can reach out to you, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So that's for probably sure. The best bet.
Yeah. And, you know, it's always great to have a third person's objective because Chris is obviously going to say great things about Actionable.
I'm a little biased.
But someone who's actually using the platform, using the technology, using the entire system and the team support that's available as an Actionable consultant has blown my mind for real. So absolutely reach out to me. Alyssa@daretosucceed.com is my email address. I would be more than happy to have a conversation with you on whether on what I think really off the mic and reach out to actionable.co. That's not a .com, it's a .co, and you can check it all out there. So Chris, I would say if I had a glass of wine on me, I would say cheers to many more years of actionable success of you and I working together with our similar strength themes and positivity. It's always a joy to be in your space because of the vision that you have and because of how positively you see our future. And it's really encouraging. So thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule and being here with us and sharing all about Actionable. I really, really, really appreciate it.
Likewise. Thanks for having me on the show. It's a pleasure, Alyssa.
And now it's time for the podcast recommendation of the week. Now, Chris and I talked about getting his business to that next level, which means that he has now the responsibility of a lot more mouths to feed and people to support inside of his business. There are definitely different challenges that come with owning a seven-figure business than a six-figure business. So this week, our podcast recommendation is the Seven-Figure CEO Podcast with Casey Graham. The Seven-Figure CEO Podcast is devoted to interviewing leaders of companies of over seven figures in revenue. In it, they talk about practical details of how they got there and how they're getting to that next level and beyond. They talk about the five P's of a seven-figure business regularly on this podcast, which is people, process, profit, product, and the personal. Sounds a lot like a six-figure business, right? But there are different issues and things that come up for those seven-figure business owners. So if this is you, this is a great podcast for you to check out. You can find the Seven-Figure CEO Podcast on iTunes or anywhere else you like to listen to podcasts. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you've enjoyed this episode, I'd be honored if you'd leave a review over on iTunes. Every single review means the world to me. To know you're listening and to know you're finding value makes this whole thing worthwhile. And hey, while you're over there, click on subscribe to make sure you're notified of future episodes. Until next time, keep being frickin' awesome.